Learned Parshas Bahaloscha a number of times before, and we know that Parshas Bahaloscha on one level is a very troubling Parsha, but we know we've learned before on another level. There are those that say Parshas Bahaloscha is one of the most optimistic, one of the most light-filled Parshios in the entire Torah, and a lot has to do with perspective. We're going to pick a few different episodes in the Parsha that I hope can help us see important lessons from Parshas Bahaloscha, really life approaches. And the first is in the very beginning of the Parsha. We know the Parsha begins with the mitzvah of lighting the neiros of the menorah, and Rashi asks a very famous question at the very beginning of the Parsha, page 774, 775, in the Stone Art School Chumash. Bahaloscha, lama nismacha Parshas HaMenorah LaParshas HaNesiim? Why does the Torah place this section of the lighting of the menorah right next to the section of the offering of the Nesiim, the princes of Israel? So Rashi tells us, that when Aaron saw the dedication ceremony that was carried out by the Nesiim, by the princes, these leaders of the Jewish people, he became upset that he wasn't part of this dedication ceremony, not him and not his Shevet. We know Shevet Levi is left out. We know that Yosef has two representatives, Ephraim and Menashe. There's no Levi. So Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to him, Chayecha, by your life, Aaron, you should know, Shelcha gedol mishalahem. Yours is greater than them. Sha'ata madlik umeitiv es haneiros, because you will light and prepare the neiros, the lamps, and the lights in the mizbeach, in the mishkan and the beis hamikdash. What you're going to do is greater than what they do. And we know that it's a huge, huge debate in Rishonim and Achronim. What exactly does this mean? In what way is Aharon's avoda, his service through the menorah, greater than the Nesiim in the dedication of the Mizbeach? And in the Sefer Shemen HaTov by Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, he was the rabbi of the Young Israel of Brooklyn and Williamsburg from a prominent rabbinic family. His brother was Rabbi Weinberger from Pseik, who passed away also, both within this past year. Although Rabbi Bernard Weinberger is now a little bit over a year ago, maybe a year and a few months, maybe 14 months ago. So in his Sefer Shemen HaTov, he answers, like, what, in what way is Aaron's avoda greater by the next Rashi, another famous Rashi, that the pasuk tells us, Perek Ches Pasuk Gimel, Vayas Kein Aaron El Mul Penei HaMenorah Ha'ala Neirosea Kasher Tziva Adonai Yes Moshe. Aaron did, opposite the face of the menorah, he raised up the lights, just as Hashem commanded Moshe. So Rashi says, Vayaskin Aaron, Aaron did this. Lahagid Shivcho Shel Aaron Sheloshina. The Sefri says that this is teaching the praise of Aaron, that he didn't change anything. And the question here is also a very famous question. What does that mean? That's the praise of Aaron? The praise of Aaron is that he didn't change? Why would Aaron ever think of changing a thing? Oh, sorry, I don't see you so well. I apologize. So in what way is that a praise of Aaron? We know when Aaron's sons changed something, what happened to them? What? They got killed. When they brought an Eish Zara, they brought a strange fire that Hashem didn't command. When they changed something, they stepped out of line and they were killed. So how is this the Shivcho Shel Aaron? How is this the praise of Aaron Sheloshina, that he didn't change anything? So where Bernard Weinberger and the Shemen HaTov wants to suggest is that the second Rashi really answers the question left with us at the end of the first Rashi. At the end of the first Rashi, we asked, in what way does Aaron's service, is Aaron's service greater than the service of the Nesiim? Hashem tells Aaron, don't worry, your service is even greater than theirs. How? So what Rabbi Weinberger wants to suggest is when it says here, El Mul Vayaskein Aaron, Lahagid Shivcho Shel Aaron Shaloshina, what Rashi is saying is, this is the praise of Aaron that was greater than the Nesiim. This is exactly what Hashem was talking about. This is the praise of Aaron, Vayas Kein Aaron, Sheloshina, that he didn't change. What does that mean that he didn't change? So Rabbi Weinberger, who comes from an illustrious Hasidic background, he suggests the famous Hasidic approach. What does it mean, the praise of Aaron, Sheloshina, that he didn't change anything? That meant that Aaron, day in and day out, did the same service of lighting those candles, And every time he did it, Shaloshina. What does that mean that he didn't change? The same enthusiasm, the same passion, the same excitement, the same trepidation that he had in lighting those neros, in lighting the menorah of the Mishkan, Shaloshina, each and every day he had that fire, he had that passion, he had that excitement. That's Shvachu Shel Aaron, that's the praise of Aaron. And that way it's greater than the Nesiim. Why? Because what was the godless of the Nesiim? The greatness of the Nesiim was that they all brought the same thing. And you know this discussion that they had of a discussion ahead of time. Was there a powwow amongst the Nesiim? Okay, we're all going to bring the same thing, right? Some say it was totally arbitrary that they all brought the same thing because they each had the other kavanas, and others say, no, they had a powwow. And they discussed that we're going to bring the same thing, but the praise of the Nesiim, even though they each brought their own thing, they were able to find their own meaning in it, right? That to each and every one, it was meaningful. So Rav Weinberger, the Shemen HaTov, suggests is that Aaron is even greater. Granted, they all had the same avoda, the Nesiim, but yet they found it personally fulfilling. But each one of them, how often did they do that avoda? How often did they do that service? Only once. So Hashem's telling Aaron, Aaron, you're upset you weren't part of them? They were one-shot deals, Aaron. Yeah, it was very special how they approached me. It's true. And they were full of passion and they were full of zeal and enthusiasm. And it was a great thing, Aaron. And I understand you're upset that you weren't able to be part of it. But Aaron, your service is even greater. You know why, Aaron? Because you're going to do the same thing every day. And every day you're going to have that same passion. Every day you're going to infuse it with meaning. And this is, of course, one of the greatest challenges that we have as Mevakshe Hashem, is those that are seeking relationships with God. Gesundheit, that every Shabbos shouldn't be the same Shabbos. Every davening shouldn't be the same davening. Every good morning to the person that we pass on the road, every day shouldn't be just the same perfunctory good morning. Every day, you know, this is what many point Chazal are teaching on Samachadish Betuva B'chol Yom Tamid Masa Vereishis, that every day God renews creation. Every day, all of existence is created again. So too, we should look as our service as it's created again, right? And we're a week after Shavuos. A week ago was Vav Sivan. And we know that that's the famous approach as to why Vav Sivan is such a holy time. Why, you know, some explain that Shavuos is one day because really every day is Kabbalah HaTorah. Right? And every day, that's why it's Matan Torah Sein Hashem gives us the Torah, but we have to receive the Torah anew each and every day. And so this is a beautiful, beautiful idea, I think, from Rabbi Weinberger, that we have to try in our own way. A week here after Shavuos, heading into the summer months, you know, the long Shabbos afternoons, that it shouldn't just be the same old Shabbos afternoons, right? And davening, that it shouldn't be the same old davening. You know that they say the Pnei Menachem, one of the Ger Rebbe's, that when he passed away, they went into his private study and they found a collection of hundreds of different types of Siddurim. Hundreds of different Siddurim. All different companies and prints and this and that. Why? Because tefillah, prayer, is so hard to always have that passion and enthusiasm and excitement of approaching God. And the Pnei Menachem, you know, would very often change up his siddurim, that a little change of a siddur sometimes helps you see it differently, you know, helps you appreciate it. You know, that's why I have three different siddurim that I rotate through. That, you know, one's more Kabbalistic, one's more Pshat-oriented, one's more Halacha-oriented. You know, so you have different Siddurim that you rotate through to try and motivate yourself. You know, and the Tzaddikim, different postures they would take. And sometimes they would daven with intense swaying, sometimes they would daven straight. You know, trying whatever it is. Aaron was able to do it. Aaron was able to do it. Shaloshina, he had that same passion, doing it the same way each and every day. You know, but this is certainly, I believe, a very important challenge to us. And of course, that this is, you know, when you think of this very important message in the beginning of Baal Oscha, when you read the rest of Baal Oscha, and all the travails and the difficulties the Jewish people had, there's no question in my mind that this is actually giving you an answer to how not to fall into the traps that the Jewish people fell into. We'll talk about the traps in a moment, what the danger is. But certainly, I believe this idea of trying to be mechadish the yashan, trying to find the new and what seems old and what seems hackneyed and tried and worn out. You know, so that's certainly a great challenge, and that's something that I think is a major component of meaningful service of God, to try and to keep it fresh in whatever way we can. Turning the page to the very next section, it's talking about the dedication of the Levim. We know that the Levim weren't supposed to be the ones serving in the Mishkan and Mikdash. It was really supposed to be the firstborns. But because of the sin of the golden calf and the firstborns took part in that sin, the Levim were taking the place of the firstborns, right? And the Levim were being elevated to this great status. So it's in Perek Ches Pasuk Yud that we see V'kravtes Halavim Lefnei Adonai V'samchu B'nei Yisrael Asyideihem Al Halavim, that they brought the Levim, and Hashem tells Moshe, you should bring the Levim in front of me, and the Jewish people will rest their hands on the Levim, right? So it's an interesting question. Wait, who rests their hands on whom? So are the Levim a karbon? We know when a Jew is bringing a karbon, there's a concept of smicha, that you put your hands on the back of the head, the back of the neck of the karbon, you put your weight on it, because you're saying like, haha, you're taking the blow that I should take. It is a substitution of sorts. But are we looking at the Levim as the karbon, as the sacrifices of the firstborns? Okay, there are some who say that. You should know that this is just like you bring close a sacrifice, an animal to serve in your place. So too, that's what the Jewish people are doing. But Rabbi Weinberger here in the Shemen Atov, he brings down another idea that when we see in a few parshios, when Moshe Rabbeinu will invest Yeshua with some of his holiness, what does he do? He puts his hands on his head, right? And that's going from a higher level to a lower, right? That Moshe invests, like transfers some of his holiness into, right, Yehoshua, his student. Moshe is the sun, Yehoshua is the moon, right? He took some of that shine of his Rebbe, of his teacher. So over here, Rav Weinberger asks in the Shemen HaTov that If the Levim are being elevated and they're taking a step up in holiness, so should it be that the smicha of the lower one gives a smicha to the higher ones? Meaning, he says, La'olam smicha mora hashpa mi gadol lekatan mimenu. You know, by Moshe and Yehoshua, it's the greater one puts his hands on the head of the lower one, right? To let that holiness that he's being mashpia, he's influencing, and that's what it's symbolizing. So why here are the Jewish people putting their hands on the head of the Levim? Lahepech, the Levim are the ones on the higher level. The Jewish people are in the lower level. They sinned. The Jewish people sinned. Right? So that's why some say it's like a sacrifice of sorts. But Rav Weinberger has another approach, and this approach is so beautiful. And this is also a tremendous life lesson. This isn't only a life lesson about how to make our relationship with Hashem meaningful, but how to make everything that we are meaningful. And he says, "Umuchruch, the bechiras halavi mitoch Yisrael, haynu mitoch hamamish, v'chalkocha mehayisrael." What Rav Weinberger suggests is that yes, v'samchu b'nei Yisrael asideim halavim, that the Jewish people who sinned, they put their hands on the head of the Levim. You know why? Because you know why the Levim were able to assume this higher level of holiness? Where did it come from? It came from the Jewish people. Understand, it's a message to Levim. Your elevated status, your unique position in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, throughout the Jewish land, throughout the Eretz Yisrael, the Arei HaLevim, and getting the Meiser. You know why you have that? Because you're coming from the Koach of the Jewish people. Everything you have is because you're representatives of Am Yisrael. And I believe what Rav Weinberger is pointing out to us here, with this idea, such a powerful idea, V'samchu b'nei Yisrael es yideim al Levim, that yes, the Levim are the higher level, but you have to understand that the Levim can never forget that. Why did they achieve such a level? They achieved such a level because they're representing the Jewish people. And so too, I believe it's an important exercise. You know, very often this happens with tzedakah, or it happens with whatever blessings that we find that we have in life. You know, do we always remember why we're given those blessings? Meaning, you know, in Rav Moshe Wolfson, the great Mashkiach of Torah Vedas, the Rav of Emunas Yisrael in Borough Park, he often says when people have difficulty giving tzedakah, like he can't understand it. He says, don't you chap? It's 100% Hashem's. He lets you keep, though 90%. He gives you 90%. He allows you to keep it. He says, 10% I'm keeping for me. And, you know, that perspective that Rav Wolfson has is a little bit this perspective. Levim, who are you? Like, if a Levi would ever think, oh, I'm better than the Stam Jew. What do you mean? Why do you think you're a Levi? Because you're coming from the Kalach. You're coming from the power of the Jewish people. Right? And whenever we have blessings in our life, we have to remember, where are these blessings? Why do we have these blessings? Right? And this is something that all too often we can't lose this perspective, you know, whatever it is, whatever blessings we have. You know, Moshe Feinstein would often speak about the better Talmidim in his yeshiva, the greater students in the yeshiva, making time for the weaker students. You have to make time for the weaker students. You have great kishronos, you have great intellectual abilities, that's awesome, great, you can grow in Torah. But part of that is because Hashem wants you to help the others. And you can't forget that. And this idea of the Jewish people putting their hands on the heads of the Levim, it's almost like the idea that, you know, that the Rishayim are putting their hands on the heads of the Tzadikim, saying, you have what you are because of us. We need you. Hashem gave you this koach to help us. And this is an idea that whenever we look at the blessings that we have in our life, it comes back to the famous quote from Rav Chaim Volozhiner, the student of the Vilna Gaon who started, you know, almost the whole modern yeshiva movement with his famous Volozhiner yeshiva in the early 1800s, who would often tell his students and his family members that you have to remember a human being was not created for, we weren't created for ourselves. Human beings are created to help other people. That's why we're in this world. And that's what Rav Weinberger is alluding to, the idea that the Bnei Yisrael put their hands on the head of the Levim to remind the Levim why they're being elevated. Don't become arrogant and haughty. Understand that you have this because of the service that you now have to do. You know, it's like the famous story when someone commented to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Rabbi Israel Lipkin, the father of the modern Musar movement, the ethicist movement in the later part of the 1800s, and said, you know, what's the big deal? If I had your mind, he was supposed to be like an unbelievable super genius, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Right? There's a famous story that, you know, when he started the Musar movement, he had some very, very vocal opponents. He was basically creating a new movement in Judaism. New movements in Judaism are not accepted so willingly. You have to prove yourself. And so he would travel throughout Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe. He had a son actually in France. And he would give these magnificent drushos. He would put up all his sources before Shabbos, post them on a bulletin board. And then Shabbos morning, he would go up and give this fantastic drusha, weaving together all the sources to show people, I'm not a nachschlepper, I'm not an idiot, I know what I'm talking about, and this is important, this new movement I want you to buy into. So one Shabbos, some of his opponents, right before Shabbos, took down his source list and put up a totally different list of sources. Totally random sources. A hodgepodge, a chulent of sources. And he went up to give his shiur, and someone took the sources off the bulletin board to give to him, and he looks at them. These aren't the sources he put up. The eyes are closed for about a minute and a half. And then he gave a brilliant shiur, weaving together all these sources. And his students came up to him, Rebbe, why did you pause for like a minute and a half? He said, well, someone changed my sources on me. It's like, what do you mean? He goes, these aren't the sources I put up. Oh my gosh. So for the minute and a half you were preparing the shiur? He said, no. I prepared the shiur in 30 seconds. The other minute I was having an internal war that I shouldn't feel so proud of myself that I bested my enemies, you know? Like, you know, like the unbelievable, that's a Baal Musar. That's a Baal Musar, the pietist, the ethicist on the highest level. But, you know, he was this incredible genius. So someone once said to him, oh, it's not a chiddush. You know, if I had your brain, if I had your intelligence, I could also be something special. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, yeah, okay, great. You know what? Maybe I am as smart as 1,000 men. But that means I have the responsibility of 1,000 men. Right? That's what it comes down to. As a person who grew up reading comic books, you know, Peter Parker, the Spider-Man, you know, that's here, Baruch Shekivanta, Michelle, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, you know, and that's, but meaning the word is not with great power come, meaning you have the power only because we expect you to do great things with it, because that's why Hashem gives it to us. Hashem gives a person wealth so you can help. Hashem gives a person strength so you can help. Certain abilities, Hashem wants you to use them in certain ways. Hashem didn't give you these abilities to, that they should go for naught. And that's all learned from the fact that the Bnei Yisrael are doing smicha to the Levim. Again, like one pshat is that they're almost like a carbon. But Rav Weinberger has a different approach. To remind the Levim that you're really coming via the koach, the as the representatives, and because of the greatness of the Jewish people. And so that's a second, I believe, very important lesson that we take from this parsha. You know what? Let's continue with Rav Weinberger here. Let's just get to his final approach, and then we'll go back to an idea from Rav Schwab. I know this year we've been learning Rav Schwab mostly, but on this parsha, you know, he has a lot of ideas, but only one that I thought I could share with you tonight. One actually, I might share Rosh Hashanah. I'm not sure why here he has like a Rosh Hashanah idea, just like the middle of Palosha. It's great, so maybe you'll have it Rosh Hashanah time sometime. Pre-Rosh Hashanah, remind me. Palosha Rosh Schwab, I have to write it down in my notes. But it's at the end of the Parsha where we also have, this Parsha's chock full of famous episodes, when Aaron and Miriam are talking negatively about their brother Moshe. And what happens to Miriam? She gets tzaras. She gets tzaras. Miriam gets tzaras. And the pasuk tells us, the second to last pasuk in the parsha, Vatisager Miriam michutz l'machaneh shivas yamim, v'ha'am lo nasa ad he'aseif Miriam. That Miriam was locked up outside of the camp for 7 days, and the people didn't travel until Miriam was able to enter the camp, until she was able to travel again with them. It's page 796, 797. Mamish, the end of the parsha. The last Rashi on the Parsha, bottom 796, the left column, mamish, second line from the bottom, v'amlo nosa, the people didn't travel until Miriam was ready to travel. Why? Ze'a kavod chalak la hamakom, b'shvil sho'ach asher nis'ak v'lo Moshe k'shehush lach liyor. Shenemar, right? V'teis atzavach choso mirachok. That this is a great honor that Hashem bestowed upon Miriam. It's payback for that one moment, that 1 hour that she spent by the side of the Nile River, waiting to see what would happen to her baby brother who was put into the river in a basket. So Rav Schwab asks an interesting question. Why now? Rav Weinberger, I apologize. This is the Sheminatov. Rabbi Weinberger asks the question, why now? This is where Hashem wants to pay her back? Meaning, this is where she's embarrassed. This is where, like everyone waiting for her, it's a tremendous kavod, but, like, this is the time to pay her back when she has tzaras. So, he has another amazing life lesson, a beautiful life lesson. What is this coming on the heels of, right? What is this coming on the heels of when Aaron and Miriam are, you know, disappointed in how Moshe acted, how Moshe was acting, because they thought he was a prophet, they were prophets. You know, why is he acting in such a different fashion than we are? And Hashem appears to them, and what does Hashem say? He says, in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Shimuna Devaroi, Hashem says, listen to me, right? You prophets, you see visions. I make myself known in dreams. I speak to you. Pasuk Zion, bottom of 794 to the top of 796. Lo chein avdi Moshe. My servant Moshe is not that. Bechol beisi bit nemanu. In my whole home, in my whole house, God's house is, right, pretty big house, nemanu. He is the most trusted. He is the most faithful. Pe el pe adaberbo. I will speak to him mouth to mouth. Umare velo v'chidos usmunas Adonai yabit umadua lo yireisim ledaber ba'avdi Moshe. I don't speak to him in images. I don't speak to him in dreams. Pe'el pe'adabrebo. Right? So, Rav Weinberg has such a beautiful idea. You know why they pay back Miriam now? It doesn't mean that she wasn't paid back before. But what new awareness did Aaron and Miriam and all of the Jewish people have because of this episode? They didn't realize how great Moshe was. They didn't realize it. They didn't know that as a prophet, he was qualitatively different than any other prophet that ever was. Any other prophet that ever will be, that's what God is saying. I don't speak to him the way that I speak to my other prophets. He's totally different. So now what did they come to? They came to a totally new awareness of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Once you come to a total new awareness of Moshe Rabbeinu, a greater appreciation, what do you have to now do? You have to be makir tov to Miriam for what she did again. Now what Miriam did was even greater. The act was the same act. But the hashlachot, the implications, the totsaot, the outcome of what she did, we didn't realize she gave us the greatest prophet who ever was. Yared, it's such a beautiful idea. And so what he says is that in life, when someone does you a favor, you say thank you. But sometimes it could take days, it could take weeks, it could take months, it could take years until you'll really understand what that person did. And when you come to that new understanding, what do you have to do? What do you have to do? You have to be makir tov again. So Rachel, celebrating a special anniversary tomorrow. This is the whole yesod of an anniversary. This is the whole yesod of a birthday. This is the whole yesod. I mean, my parents are very against Father's Day and Mother's Day, and you know, they're not into that. You know, every day is Mother's Day. We all heard that wrong. But the truth is, what's the milus of such a day? There has to be a time at which you take a step back and learn to appreciate that person anew. That's what an anniversary is about. That's what a birthday is about. When you have that opportunity and when you're able to see them in that new way, you're able to have another year of life experience together and another year of appreciating that other person, whether a spouse, whether a friend on a birthday, whether it's whoever it is. Weinberger is saying it's mechayev, a new round of Hakaras HaTov, greater recognition. What a beautiful idea, no? And this ties into the first idea. Why does it tie into the first idea? Because what's the godless of Aaron that he didn't change, that every day he was able to have that passion? A person who's seeking out God every day. A person who every day understands how different life is from one day to the next. How you're a different person one day to the next. A person who's so in tune with herself, so in tune with himself. Every day, what is there? There's that new appreciation of God. And that's what Moda'ani is. Every day it's a new appreciation of the blessing of life. A new appreciation of what you can do. It's like unbelievable. Mamsh, that Tchiloso Tachov B'Sofa, that the beginning is attached to the very end. Mamsh, the first idea and the last idea in these parshios from Rav Weinberger, totally, totally connect. About always working hard. And again, it's work. To be able to appreciate uniqueness, to be able to be mechadish the yashon, that it shouldn't, that what is old shouldn't become stale, God forbid, that it should always be fresh. And sometimes that's by seeing things in new ways, by working harder to appreciate, to uncover greater ma'alos, greater character traits and appreciations. And again, sometimes things take a while to develop. Sometimes you can't see it right away. Sometimes, as we said, years. Again, how old is Moshe when this story happens? You're talking about he's in his 80s, right? He's quite old. Again, depending how you look at the chronology of the Torah, it could be he's much older. But you're talking about a story that happened at least 8 decades earlier. And now we're saying, now we see what you really did, Miriam. as a little girl, now we really appreciate what you did. And we have to say thank you again because of who your brother was and who your brother became. What I wanted to say for the end, and it's a little bit late, so the one Rav Schwab idea I wanted to get to, we won't get into the depths of it, but he relates a very beautiful idea on pages 786, 788. I think the most famous single story, an idea perhaps, in this parsha is the Nun and Hafuchim, the upside down Nuns. We spent a lot of time talking about it, that this is its own Sefer Torah. There aren't five Chumashim, there are seven Chumashim. There's Bereishis Shemos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, until Vaybinsoa, Vaybinsoa, Bamidbar, after Vaybinsoa, and then Devarim, right? And we know why is it inserted here? Rashi quotes from the Gemara in Shabbos, right? Lahafsik bein Puranus lePuranus. To separate between punishments and punishments, between two sections of punishments. And we know what the section of punishments in Perek Yud Aleph is. Vayiyam kimisonim rab aznei Hashem, right, that the people are complaining to Hashem, and God hears, and God gets upset, and they're complaining about the food, and they're complaining about mitzvos. They're just kvetching. They're kvetching a lot. And Hashem punishes them. Right, so that's one section of punishment. That's a bad thing. What's the section of punishment before? The section of punishment before is a famous question we discussed in the past. Tonight I want to talk about Rav Schwab's approach very, very briefly because I apologize, it is late. Perek Yud Pasuk Lamed Gimel. What is the first section of punishment? Vayisu Mehar Adonai Derech Shloshes Yamim. Va'aron Bris Adonai Nosea Lefnehem Derech Shloshes Yamim Lasur Lahem Menucha. That they traveled away from the mountain of God, travel of 3 days. The Aron, the Ark of the Covenant, was traveling in front of them, right, to seek out a resting place. So, what's the problem? Where's the bad thing in this pasuk? What was it? Vayisu mehar Hashem. They ran away like school children from Har Sinai. Ran away like teachers, right? That's what I should say, right? No, but what's the idea? Why? So Rav Schwab has an interesting take, meaning, why is it called Har Hashem? It should be called Har Sinai. We know it was only Har Hashem when God was on it. After God left Har Sinai, the people were allowed to go up the mountain. It was just a regular mountain like any other mountain. So Rav Schwab says the fact that it's called here, Vayisu Mehar Hashem, Derech Shloshes Yamim, that shows us the attitude the people had. Meaning they wanted that to be the Har Hashem. Meaning, God, stay on the mountain. Don't follow us. God, sit. Stay there. Don't come with us. We don't want our teacher following us, right? We don't, right? Like, the teacher is, like, with you in camp. You're like, oh, God, no. Right? I don't want my teacher to be my teacher in camp. Like, that's great, right? But the idea, that's how we see that they had that attitude. Vayisu mehar Hashem. Because that should be Har Sinai. No, they said Har Hashem, you Hashem, you stay there. Right? So why is that Puranus? Why is that punishment? It's obviously a bad attitude. So we know what Rav Schwab says. Sometimes a bad attitude is the worst punishment. Very interesting. Sometimes a bad attitude is the punishment itself. That's the punishment. And, the next section, Vayim Kemisa Oninim, and he says that what's the punishment is that Nebuchadnezzar Jew should have such an attitude towards Torah mitzvahs, that they're excited to flee from Torah mitzvahs. And what's the next section? Vayam kimisonim ra, misonim from lashon of an onain, which is when your close relative dies before the funeral. It's like despondent mourning, right? Vayam kimisonim ra baznei Hashem. Meaning that's when they were kvetching about Torah mitzvahs. Meaning, so the one section is they were excited to get away from Torah mitzvahs. The next section is they're sad that they're stuck with Torah mitzvahs. Hashem said, I got to put a break between these two. Right? But the key, the yesod, is that what's the Puranus? In the second section, we see them being punished. Where's the punishment? The punishment is Nebuch, that they had such an attitude. Sometimes that's a punishment. A punishment is when a person could be so verbissen, so bitter, and so negative. That's mamsh the worst punishment. That's the worst punishment. And so it means, obviously, that we can work on ourselves to move past such attitudes. And that's obviously a great challenge, but I think those are the other ideas that we spoke about can help us work past such attitudes. So that's why Parsha Balosa, Parsha, such great challenges. I believe that what we started with is true, that it's a Parsha that seems so disappointing and so upsetting and so tragic, but yet Alpi Kabbalah, we've learned before that it's a Parsha full of light, meaning, yeah, on one level, it's a Parsha full of tragedy, but on the other level, the Parsha is all about the light, about how we don't have to fall into such tsaras again. Shkoyah.